I'm Mike, I'm an addict. First I'd like to thank God for his grace, his mercy, his blessing, that I'm like able to stand here today. And like right now I'm real overwhelmed. Because when I got the topic, who's an addict, like it gave me like this last week to reflect on like where I really came from. And like Brett was saying, like no human power could have done this for me, for where I'm at today. I got into like the literature a little bit this week, and I know that that was through God too, because like sometimes we're life on life's terms, and a lot of stuff like coming into my life, like I forget about the literature, and I forget about like getting in touch with like members on a real level, and not just like playing cards and playing basketball and like standing outside the meet and grabbing my dick, telling lies and shit like that. So I got back into the literature, and something caught me in the literature. Like the first thing that caught me, was about it not all being about the drugs. And like I think back to growing up, and like this disease has been showing up in my life like long before the drugs ever did. I need to say I come from a good family, but it wasn't good enough for me. And like I can remember growing up and like the horrors of this disease creeping into my life, like low self-esteem and jealousy and self-loathing and not having the ability to be okay with myself, long before the drugs ever came into play. And I was always looking for the answer and I couldn't figure it out. Like, why I feel like this? Why can't I be cool with myself? I'm talking like before I ever seen a commercial on drugs, like I felt this way. And wasn't until I came into this process that I found out it's because I got a disease. I need to say I was introduced to this program in 1993, and my clean date ain't until 99. So the answer was given to me. I had plenty of opportunities to find out what was going on with me, but the pain hadn't gotten great enough for me to stop yet. There's a part in the literature in Who's an Addict where it talks about the capacity to feel human was lost. I was standing in the bank today with my girlfriend, and I was going to get a couple dollars out to come up here, and that started touching me, and I'm in the line at the bank, and like I'm getting ready to start crying. I remember what it feels like not to feel like a human being. The part of the chapter that talks about like our living skills was reduced to the animalistic level. I remember that. I remember what it's like to sit in a jail cell. And worse than that, like I remember what it's like to be on the streets and need to get another one. Not eating, not washing my ass. Every time I roll into jail, I got scabies and lice because I ain't washed my body or my hair in so long. The people I care about, the people I love, like, need to keep themselves at arm's distance away from me because the things that I do in my life destroy them worse than I could destroy myself. Like I said earlier, I come from a caring, loving and caring family. And there come a time in my life where they had to, like, take me out of the picture, where I can't mess with you no more, because every time I let you in my house, something comes up missing. Or every time I let you back in my life and you tell me things are going to change, like they don't. For me, from the door, it's getting with, like, I can't pick up that first one. Because I struggle with that a lot of times. Like, I came into my first facility as a teenager. I was a young boy. And there was old heads. I go to jail and the old heads would say, when I was your age, I did this and I was doing this and I was doing that and I was doing this. And for me, like, I was a full-blown heroin addict. I wasn't doing none of that shit. And the book talks about that, every addict's crisis level is different. Everyone has a different threshold for pain. Don't get it twisted by the way I look, because like I drug my ass through this process trying to get this thing. So I would roll up into the treatment facilities and I would hear all this stuff, but I wasn't feeling it. I was acting it, but I wasn't living it. Because usually when I roll up in there, it was usually a stipulation of some court or some judge or some exterior thing. And I get out and I continue to use. And for a while, like, I ran into that. I started believing that thing that, like, once you're an addict, you're always going to be an addict for the rest of your life. And I truly believe that. Especially, like, the evidence that was in front of my life. Because all the old heads who shot dope in my neighborhood and around my house, like, have been shooting dope for 30 years and has shown no evidence that there was a way out of this thing. And when I came here, I really felt that. I got into Altoona in 1999 through a treatment facility, a halfway house. And by this point in my life, like, the exterior stuff was shot. I mean, that was obvious. But there's some things started happening on the inside of me. Another reason I know that it ain't just the drugs for me, like, I got there, I wasn't shooting dope. I wasn't using no drugs. And, like, I continued to steal. I continued to lie. I continued to, like, the group of guys that I got in there with, there was some killers in that house. There was some real gangsters, some real hustlers. These boys had been up in the penitentiary for 10, 15 years. Look, I ain't that guy. I ain't. And I got up in there and I wanted to throw this mask to fit in with these people. So, like, I continued to do the same things I do, and there's another part that, like, hit me right in the heart. It says we start using our old behaviors. We wear them as a badge, as a pride. I felt like if I continued to do these behaviors, like, I'd be all right with these cats. But, like, getting all right with you was fucking me up real bad. So we had, like, this little community meeting, and in the morning you would address the people that were in your community, and it seemed to be like every morning someone had some shit to say about me. And that shit started hurting. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have an excuse no more. I'm not using. Why am I stealing? Why ain't I cool with myself? Why can't I sleep at night? It ain't the drugs. So I got some suggestions to drop the mask and to be myself. See, there's no doubt in my mind through what I've learned about my God that, like, God has always loved me. So there ain't no reason why I can't love myself. And, like, I'm not trying to stand up at the podium now and act like I'm totally cool with myself. And act like the nights don't come still where I can't sleep at night and it still ain't got nothing to do with the drugs. See, being an addict, the identity statement, the disease concept, like, I see that clear. I don't need glasses to see that shit. There's no doubt in my mind what I suffer from. It's just, do I have the willingness to, like, do something about it today? I know one thing about my life today is that I know for a fact I have a choice of whether, like, I'm going to let this thing pimp me out or not. See, I found out that, like, even without putting drugs in my life, if I'm standing outside and I'm with a group of guys that are talking about a certain topic or a certain issue that I'm uncomfortable with or don't know nothing about or have no business talking about, like, I'm still capable of, like, getting in that conversation. And then when I get by myself, like, I'm wondering why I ain't cool with myself no more. And just 20 minutes ago, I was cool with myself. I'm wondering, sometimes I want, like the thought process I go through on a daily basis. See, I'm not trying to talk about what I think about God, or even what I see in you. I'm for real, what I feel in myself, the way I feel God inside of me. And, like, sometimes my thinking contradicts that feeling. And like I said, the concept of the disease is clear to me. And it's just whether I'm going to run with that or I'm going to, like, am I going to run to God or am I going to run to this shit? I found out through this process that, like, if I run to God, like, things pass. And God won't give me nothing I can't handle, but I will give myself something I can't handle. I ain't ready to accept them consequences like just right now, today. My track record shows, for real, that I could leave off this podium, go back home, and shoot a bag of dope. And like Brett said, like before I came up here, like for real, like I asked God, like please, don't let me go up here trying to sound good and say something real fly, say something too fly that the shit ain't even real. Please just let me come up here and be a messenger. It's nice working for God. It really is. Cause like doing something for this process is doing something for my God. And there's no motive in it. Our literature talks about it all the time, that pretty much this is my responsibility for the gift I've been given. The therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. And the disease tell me you ain't got nothing to share. The disease tell me don't go up there and say nothing, because you ain't got nothing to share. But then the literature says that every addict, even the addict with one day clean, has the innate ability to help another addict. And I don't know why God sent me here today, but I'm glad he did. I'm still a little nervous. And God's telling me, like, I got you. I just went through a situation a couple months ago. And, like, I know I needed to share about this, and I thank God for that little pause. I just went through a situation a couple months ago where I had to get some surgeries done on my mouth. And it was like I really needed to remember who I was through this time. And I got some teeth pulled, and the one tooth that they had pulled, an infection had went up and put a hole in my sinus. And then a bone had come down through the stitches. So they had to surgically stitch this, rip it, surgically stitch this. Like my face was so swollen, my eye was swelled shut when I would wake up in the morning. And the shit hurt. And there were some people on my support group who only know what I tell them and only know what they see. They don't know what's up. Ronald always says, like, don't forget your story. And some people was telling me, take some medicine. And more will be revealed that talks about that we could take medicine if it's letting you don't know. If I'd have took that shit, I would have abused it like it stole something from me. There have been times that have come up through this process where that if I went to forgot my story like I would have used, this shit was legit. It hurt. I was calling my support group. They would see me walking up the street and I could feel them saying, here he come again with his mouth, man. We got to hear about his mouth again. I was going through it, and it hurt and it was legit. But like God was with me. Like I could feel God standing there saying, I got you, kid. Don't pick nothing up. Don't believe the hype. Don't listen to these people. Listen to what I'm telling you. You'll get through it. Don't put nothing in your body. We'll be all right. And I didn't put nothing in my body, and like I'm standing up here today and the pain went away. See, I could deal with physical pain. I could deal with exterior pain. I could not tell you what would have happened if I would have put some pain pills in my mouth. Because like I don't stop there. I was talking to some people before the meeting, and to sum up my story, what I need to remember about my story is that, like, I'm a petty thief, low-budget junkie. And, like, once I put one in my body, I can't stop. There's no stopping. I've met people in my life that could use a drug and stop when they want to. I can't do that. Sometimes I hear people, when I first got here, see the other fellowship's literature, because when I got here I was hopeless, and I'm not saying this to like put down the other fellowship, but there's a spot in the other fellowship's literature that talks about rarely have we seen anybody fail to have thoroughly followed our path. I ran with that shit. I was constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself and other people. And my exits were getting like real narrow by the time I got here. And I got introduced and I listened and I heard what Narcotics Anonymous said, that no one who has thoroughly followed our path has ever failed. And our message that any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way of life. Some of my exits were starting to get smashed. An addict like me, like, I can choose who helps me. I really can. The book says that, like, this disease or this recovery process don't discriminate. See, when I first got here, like, unless you was talking about shooting dope, smoking crack, or going to jail, like, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And don't bring that shit towards me. I can remember sitting up in treatment and judging who's an addict. And someone told me when I first got here, you know what the difference between us and God is like, he don't try and be us, so stop trying to be him. And so I come in and I want all this help, and I'm listening to the indispensables, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, but like, you can't help me, because you don't know where I've been. And the book also says that my thought process is always up for revision. And still on a daily basis, I need to go up for revision in my thought process. The literature tells me that when I come into this room, I need to be open to everybody. Whether you're sitting in this seat high, whether like this is your 15th time coming through the rooms in the last year, whether you rape babies, shock girls, hit your wife, whether you murdered your wife or your mother, whatever you've done, like, I need to be there for you. I'm an addict. The book tells me, like, I can't live without you. I can't manage my life. I do not have no ability to live life on life's terms. We have the ability to live life on life's terms. See, when I try and live life on life's terms, I end up with, like, some other joker managing my life. Whether it's the CO, or whether it's the treatment facility, or whether I'm in a mental hospital, or whether, like, I'm rolling up on the block and there's a little kid telling me to, like, get my faggot ass in the back, or give me your money. I don't miss that shit. And I understand that the only thing unique about me is my story. See, I don't know how you feel when you wake up in the morning sick. I don't know how anybody feels when their family don't want nothing to do with them. I don't know how you feel when you go to jail. See, when I go to jail, I'm going to be real with you. In the daytime, I lace my sneakers up and I front. And at night, I go back to my cell and I cry my eyes out. And I catch myself in the mirror wondering how the fuck this happened. And I miss my family. And I miss the basic human necessities that we have. I'm going to tell you, man, I like eating what I want to eat. I really do. I like getting up when I want to get up. I like being able to call home. And I don't hear like these charges ain't going to be accepted. They're like the blessings that I've been given in this process. Another thing is, like, I wasn't no hustler. I wasn't no tough guy. I might not have did some of the things that some people have done in Narcotics Anonymous, and I might have done some things that some people might not have done in Narcotics Anonymous. And at one point, that was real important to me. It's the way I chose who I was going to hang out with. It would be the reason if I talked to you or not. It'd be the way that, like, I get you to validate me. I found out today that shit ain't important. It's not even close. I got real friends today. I'm an addict. For real, like, I've done some of the same things you've done. That common bond we share in Narcotics Anonymous. The feeling of not knowing who your friends are. Having to hang out with people that I didn't want to hang out with. I could remember, like, wondering, like, what the hell am I doing with this guy? But ain't no one else want to mess with me. And it was one of my tunnels to ways and means. Today I got some kind of choice on who I spend my time with. and the disease still pop up, even with that. And any given moment like that, and like I need to say for real, that the worst horrors and the worst symptoms I feel from this disease come in like the form of low self-esteem and jealousy. It's been fucking shit up for me my whole life. And I apologize for some things that come out of my mouth, because that's me. And like, please don't confuse that with my God, because it's not, because that's me. Some things have happened in my life that if I would have just accepted right from the door and accepted who I was, I could have walked away from it. The first time I shot heroin, I didn't want to put that in my arm. I didn't. I was scared. I had some knowledge of this stuff. But the people that were around me, like low self-esteem, told me, you need to do this. The disease said, go put that in you right now. Or you're going to be labeled a punk. And then I found myself like on the streets with someone calling me a punk. Because I need to say, like, when I start using like the ways and means to get more, like, I'll do just about anything. I really will. And I've done some things through this process over not like since I've been introduced to this process and have went back out and went back out and went back out. Like, I've done some things that have really torn up the inside of me. I've done some things that make me feel like I'm less of a man still today. I've done some things that still today, if I edge God out, I feel like I'm less of a human being. Like, I thank God for this process and the people in these rooms. Like, Ronald always talks about, like, the miracle piece. Like, I know I'm a miracle. I have the evidence in my life that this thing works. I have the evidence in my life I don't know nothing. Anything that comes out my mouth is like some stuff I heard from some other people, some information I got, something the literature told me. I don't know anything. I thank God for sponsorship. I thank God for sponsees. Because for real, like, 98% of the time, my sponsees are sponsoring me. And I thank God for that. Because I remember before I, like coming up on a year clean, like pride and ego started stepping in. Like, I know something. I'm still an addict. That ain't ever going to change. My profession might change. My weight might change. In the summertime, my skin gets a little bit darker. Shit like that might change. My income level. I'm always going to be an addict. Whether I choose to be an addict in active addiction or whether I choose to be like an addict in this process. I need to say I don't regret anything I've went through. The relationship and the closeness I feel with God today. Like, if I had to drop back 3 years and do this all over again, like, I'd drop back 3 years and do this all over again. And sometimes that piece comes up too, and I need to be honest. Like, and it's part of my, like, addict thinking. Like, the disease say, well, like, you ain't shot dope in almost 3 years. Why you gotta go to a meeting tonight? Why you gotta be respectful to your girl? Ain't just not shooting dope enough? Why I gotta be nice to people? And then God says, because I picked you up out the gutter, and I've given you a gift. And like, lately, like, I've been struggling with that, what I've been gifted. Like, I work in a treatment facility, and from the door I need to say it's not my recovery. I do not base it on, I do this shit on the outside. But like, I've been struggling with, like, is this where I want to stay in my life? Is this where I want to work? And I could feel God coming in and telling me, because much has been given, much is required. Like, I didn't bring you here for you to choose what you're going to do with your life. See, when you choose what you do with your life, like, you shoot dope. You go to jail. People need to start putting their hand up again and keeping you this far away from them. I've given you a gift. I've given you the opportunity to live two lives in one lifetime. See, I understand I'm only this much further away from like running out of the back of a bandominium, jumping over onto the next roof, down the stairs. I'm only this far away from pissing in the jar. I'm only that far away from sharing a metal toilet with another man. I'm only that far away from waking up in the morning and not knowing how I'm going to get the next one and not even wanting it, but not having a choice. And I know like I'm only this far away from God's grace and mercy. I need to say that everything that's happened in my life, like the credit needs to go to God. And if you don't have a God yet, like use the rooms, please. If you don't have a sponsor yet, please get a sponsor. The book talks about that, and I forget what chapter, and just for today, I believe it says, to those whom sponsorship is important, get the most out of this process. My sponsor's like my best friend. He really is, like this man loves me. Like my closest blood relative to where I'm staying right now, due to the direct results of active addiction, is 200 miles away. And I don't feel like no less of a family member with this man, or with a lot of people that are in this room right now. On that intimate level, you know what I mean? And I remember doing a 4-step with my sponsor and like dig it. We did it on the beach in Ocean City, Maryland. You need to know, like by the end of my run, I was a street level junkie. I hustled Tylenol and batteries and razor blades at the corner store to get another one. My last charge was a strong arm robbery on an 85-year-old lady. And that's the kind of person I was. And I'm sitting on this beach with my sponsor, and I'm telling him some of these things. And this man's laughing, right? But like he's laughing because he can relate. And I'm crying, and he's crying. And he's putting his hand on me, and he's telling me everything's going to be okay. And he's telling me you're growing. And he doesn't say that to masturbate my mind. He says that because sometimes I don't recognize like the God inside of me. Like you're growing and I love you and hold on. And like let's get ready to start working with that stick. And that's how it is. The book talks about, see, I recognize what disease I got now. You know what I mean? I know I suffer from the disease of addiction. And the literature told me that the 12 steps were the solution. And I thank God that my sponsor got a sponsor who got a sponsor. You know what I mean? Because if not, like, he would just be passing me on some of his stuff. My sponsor gives me what the fellowship has to offer. I need to say, like, in closing, that, like, today I'm not a hopeless addict. In fact, like, I got hope today. I need to say that I could really feel God inside of me. So, like, you don't get confused and come up to me after the meeting. Like, if I said anything that might have touched you, like, please give props where props is due. Recognize that there's a God working in my life and that this ain't me. I need to say that I can truly and genuinely say that I love everybody in Narcotics Anonymous. And that I don't know nothing. That was the most profound thing I found out. It feels good to sit up here and say, I don't know nothing. I only know I feel something inside of me that keeps me moving. I know that if I'm going through something, I could pull anybody in this room and pull them on side and tell them what's up with me. And they'll give me a hug and tell me I love you. And they won't tell me it's going to be okay. They're going to tell me how to make it okay. What they did to make it okay. If one more person would have told me I was going to be okay, I'd have fucking died. And I just want to thank this area for allowing me to be in service. And thank God for allowing me to be on this crew tonight. Because it's truly a better crew than I used to run with. like to thank God for being here. Thank you.
Second speaker tonight is Rich S. from the Dormont Group of NA. He's in the South Hills area of Narcotics Anonymous.
Good afternoon, Rich. The only thing I'm feeling right now is some pressure on my bladder. I truly am, you know what, I can't tell you if I am brain dead or at peace right now. I'm really not sure because I'm very relaxed and I have no idea what I'm going to talk about at all. And we had such a time coming up here that it really drained me of all my energy. So I'll just try to, I've got a couple ideas what I want to talk about, and hopefully they can stay spiritual in nature, because anyway. I guess this is wide open. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day and said, you know what, who is an addict? What am I going to talk about? Who is an addict? This much I can tell you for sure. See, Nick? Nick is an addict. Having known him for about 10 years now, no question about it. Now, I guess it's like wide open. I can really talk about anything that I need to. What I know that I can talk about when it comes to who is an addict is my own personal experience and what it took then and what it takes now for me to recognize that. And I think that the important part for me, trying to share my recovery with you, because I don't have any desire to share my addiction with you, that the difference between remembering that I'm an addict is harder at 11 years than it was at 1 year. And, you know, it's come full circle for me. I can remember sitting in a treatment facility. I was 120, I was 40 pounds lighter than I am now. Now imagine 40 pounds off of me, okay? My skin was gray. My cheekbones were sticking out. I was in a hospital, and telling some guy with a master's degree that he didn't know what he was talking about. He was telling me that I was an addict. I used a little bit too much. Okay, you know, I got no willpower. I'll buy that. But this drug addict thing, I wasn't going for, you know? And because, you know, it's our diversity around here is amazing. I personally still had two brand new cars in the driveway and a house and a family and a good paying job. So that's why I wasn't an addict, you see. And I believe that. I believe that I became dependent on chemicals. I believe that I used a little too much, a little too often, but not an addict. And, you know, to be honest with you, just the way that I used, the way I grew up, the way that my life went for the first 30 years, the whole addict concept was not familiar to me. When I got into treatment, when I got into this program, I had not known what Narcotics Anonymous was. I did not know anything really about the disease process. When they told me I had a disease, I said, right. I said, there wasn't any disease sitting on my chest and dumping any of that shit down my throat. There wasn't any disease putting any of that stuff up my nose. There wasn't any disease throwing that money on the bar. That was me doing that. You know, and that was my concept. That was my reference. My reference was that everything that possibly went wrong had to be my fault and couldn't have been my fault all at the same time. So, and I'm sitting there, and here's what I did. This guy couldn't read. I couldn't be like him. This guy was this size. This guy was this color. She was this, and he was that, and she was this. And I could understand why all of you were qualified as an addict. But not me. Okay, but if I have to be here to save face, which is what I was doing, then okay. And then they told me I was an alcoholic too. That was a little easier to believe because what I believed that was my father was an alcoholic, because I knew he was. But I hadn't had a drink probably for 2 years, 2.5 years before I got into treatment. I had a bar in my game room. There was enough booze behind that bar to fill up a bathtub. Never took a drink for a couple years before I got clean. Because when I was dope sick, the alcohol just did not get me the effect that I needed. You know, and that's the way it was for me. So I couldn't have been an alcoholic because I hadn't had a couple of drinks. Now, when they pulled the truth out of me, the 2.5 years earlier that I had a couple of drinks cost me $4,000 a drink that night. I spent a night in county jail with a 3-piece suit on, and I had charges pending against me from 2 Baldwin police officers for terroristic threats. But I didn't have a problem with drinking. And so I guess the point that I'm trying to make is the fight was still in me. The insanity was still in me from my disease, that here I was sitting in treatment, having thrown my hands up in the air because I didn't have any other answers. I can remember every day thinking to myself, I really got to stop doing this. I'm laying in bed, and this is like, you know, I don't know about you guys, but my life was like Groundhog Day, you know, every single day. The alarm went off, I woke up, I did the same thing. Went back to bed hoping I could wake up in a different place. The alarm went off, and I woke up in fucking Punxsutawney again the next morning. And and it just kept repeating itself. I laid in bed every night. Now, after I got a little clarity, I got the program, I stayed clean for a little while, and I got some clarity. I realized this wasn't every single night that I did this. But I would lay in bed at night, nodding off, or wherever I was nodding off that particular evening, and think, you know, I really got to quit doing this. I have to quit doing this. And I would tell myself, you got a good job, you got a wife, you got a daughter, you got a nice house in the suburbs, you got to be some kind of an asshole. Just get a grip. I'm stopping. After I stayed clean for a while, I realized the only time I ever told myself that was when I had something in me. I don't ever remember telling myself that I had those things in my life and that I got to quit doing this when I was jonesing, when I was laying there sick. I don't ever remember saying that to myself. So the disease had me for a long, long time, but I didn't know any of this stuff, you know, and I don't want to. I'm not a dumb guy. I'm really not. I just... My reference point was about willpower and strength and, you know, getting knocked on your ass and jumping back up and going right back into the fight. And so that's how I came into recovery, you know, and that's how I joined you guys. Nodding my head like everybody else was doing, saying the stuff I heard you guys saying and not believing any of it for a second. I can remember every day. I did the same thing, you know, the alarm went off, I would, it wasn't there. You know, what I got the night before for this morning was not there again. So I go to work. That was another message. I went to work every single day. I mean, how bad could I be? Well, I went to work because that's where I was running my scams to get my dough. My disease had gotten to a point where it was a little more expensive than I could afford out of my pay. So that's where I was popping. And I had somebody doing that for me. So I would get to work and I would start running scams and I would start making phone calls, which I don't recommend. If you plan on using again, it's very expensive. Okay? So every day I wake up, I start feeling sick, I would go to work. I would be sick. It'd be 8 o'clock, it'd be 8:30, it'd be 9 o'clock. Okay? I had the chills. If it was 90 degrees outside, I had the chills. My ass was leaking, my nose was leaking, and I was working with 50 people and walking around trying to act like there was nothing going on and thinking that they didn't really have a clue that there was anything going on with me. So I make a phone call, okay, all right, so, you know, and then go through the whole routine. 20 minutes later, the phone rings. Now, this whole time, I'm sick as a dog. I described it to you. Some of you probably have felt that before. The phone rings. I pick the phone up, and they say, I got it. I'll be there in 20 minutes. Like this. My ass quit leaking. The chills went away. My shoulders got straight up. My chin was out, and I was fine for 20 minutes. 20 minutes, car pulls up outside, this old beat-up car with shit hanging off of it. You could hear the car a mile away. You know, two junkies pull up outside. I go out to the car, get in the car, stay in the car for 2 minutes, come back in, and I thought nobody saw this going on, man. Go into the bathroom, use, and just like that, it started all over again. What am I going to do when this wears off? Where am I going to get money from? Where am I going to cop again? What am I going to do when this wears off? The only time I was okay, there wasn't a chemical in my system, you know, and I realized that after I stayed clean for a while, that it was all a lie. You know, it was all about my inability to cope with life around me. It was all about my inability to find some mechanism that, and the mechanism that I found here, my inability to find some way to feel good about myself and some way to feel like a part of anything. And I'm not unique that way, but I thought I was. So I'm fighting this whole disease concept, this whole drug addict concept, and I always like to tell a story about I get into the hospital and the and I'm sitting in treatment and a nurse comes over to me and she says, she's interviewing me to see if they're going to put me in a detox or in the rehab right away. And she says, what were you using? And I told her morphine and what was the most recent thing you were using? I told her a morphine tablet. She said, well, when was the last time you used? I said, yesterday. She said, how much did you use? And I said, I used two. She said, oh, okay. And, my wife was with me at the time. She takes my wife, says, come here, honey, puts her arm around her, disappears with her, and comes back without her. And so she says to me, okay. She said, how many did you say that you used? And I said, all right, okay. All right. And she got this real mean look on her face. I said, okay, I used four. You know? It turns out this lady was a recovering addict. And you know, by 10 o'clock at night, she had me up to 6. By a week later, she had me up to 10. By the time I left treatment, she had me up to 14, and I still haven't told her the truth. I didn't know. I was lying to these people who were trying to help me. I truly believed that, and you know, I guess to some degree was raised to believe that I was on my own. I had to fight my own way through things. So I got to this program with no concept of letting people help me, with no concept of sitting down in a room full of strangers, and we were a lot of smoking meetings back then, with a room full of strangers and telling you about myself. I mean, this shit was so corny to me that I couldn't believe I was even attempting it when I got to this program. So, a couple people reached out to me when I was in treatment, and you know, I guess kind of where I'm going with this is what who is an addict is about for me is about early in my recovery, what the whole idea of being an addict was about. I didn't like it. Today, I can stand right here and tell you, thank God I'm an addict. You know, I honestly believe that. I honestly believe that, I mean, for a lot of years around here, I used to say, if I got an opportunity to speak, which I think is a true gift, that to be here right now and to be able to speak in front of you folks, there's no greater feeling in the world. Today, I can honestly tell you that if you remove my daughters from the equation, then there is no greater feeling in the world. Because they've taken over all the greatest feelings that I get to have today. And some of the ones I don't like too, by the way. But the idea of being an addict is where every single day begins and ends for me. My acceptance level and my surrender level to this disease at any given moment will dictate that moment. And what I mean by that is when I stood up, I said that it's a lot harder for me today than it was. There are times when I'm not patient, when I'm not centered, that I will say something along the lines of, and you've heard this before, that recovery, I wish I had 9 months clean, I wasn't working, I was laying in the sun every day, going to 3 meetings a day, and didn't have a care in the world. And when I'm stressed out, and when I want to kill somebody, I mean that, I feel that. But most times, no thanks. The trade-off for me is that I get to be able to know what I know and seen what I've seen happen in this program in the time that I've been here, in the wonder and the I guess I'm becoming a little bit of a dinosaur around here. And when I stood up here tonight, I was trying to decide whether I was going to try and talk about the spiritual principles that drive me in my life today, or whether I was going to bitch about everything that I don't like about the fellowship, the way that it's changed since I got here. And I'm not going to do that. I believe that I was blessed to come into the program when I did. And there's no question in my mind that if I look, I was talking to my sponsor on the way here. I've known him since the day I got here. He's still around. There's two or three people in my life that I've known the whole time. And what they taught me was to be conservative in my approach to this fellowship. What they taught me to do was they taught me what surrender meant. And I believe that my success and or failure is directly proportionate to my level of surrender to the disease. What I heard, like most people probably did when people were talking about surrender, was quit. And that's exactly what it means. But it doesn't mean give up. It means quit fighting a battle that you can't win, that I can't win. And so when my acceptance level gets to the point where I'm okay with being an addict, I'm okay with the time that it's taken off of me, you know, I'm okay with the things that I don't necessarily want to do, but that I know that I need to do to continue my journey in this program, my life is terrific. When I distance myself from people, when I distance myself from the program, when I start to think that because I've got some time together, because I've got a good life, because I've got my life together, then I stop working as hard, you know, and that's the way that the cycle goes, you know. The difference for me, and there's no question in my mind, the difference for me is the people that are in my life. So when I share, and especially if I share where I know there's newcomers, the key to me from the day I got here until now has been the people in this program. Another reason why I don't necessarily talk about my God is because I'd probably freak a few of you out if I started talking about God. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I really don't. I do not mean that in a bad way. What I'm trying to get across, and Nick and I were talking about it on the way up here, what I'm trying to get across is that the way that I have a very aggressive personality, you know, and I work a lot better with things that I can touch. You know what I mean? And again, I'm just speaking for myself. My people in my support group, the people that are around me that stay in touch with me, keep me connected when I don't want to be connected, you know. And I can get lazy with the work that I do with my higher power and be okay. I can not get lazy with the interactions that I have with the people in my life and be okay, because that puts me alone, and that's a bad place for me. And see, I'm trying to be very careful because I don't want to offend anybody. I'm trying to share just for me, and I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression. You know, and I'm okay with it. I really am. I'm okay with what I believe in, and I'm okay if you're not okay with it. So, I wish I knew what time it was. Back to acceptance and surrender. It doesn't matter what day it is. It doesn't matter what I did the day before. When I wake up and remember that I'm a recovering addict, the greatest thing that I can do for myself is to remember that I have a higher power, to remember that I have this fellowship, and to remember who I was and who I could be. And I don't necessarily think in an instant, but for me today, the difference between early recovery and now, the relationships that I made are very, very important to me. And the steps that I've practiced and the principles that I've practiced and the amount of time that I've invested in people and in this fellowship, because I've invested a lot of my time in this fellowship, and I'm so glad that I did. I've felt some of that recently. I really have. I've felt some of that. I've gone through some personal changes in my life, which I'm not going to get into right now. But what I can tell you is it's traumatic. It involves my marriage or lack of marriage at this point. It involves my children, you know. And it takes a lot of faith to be able to go through what I went through. I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, because I'm not bragging. It took me a lot of time to gain the faith and to gain the courage that it took for me. I convinced myself for a long time that staying with my children was the right thing to do. And you know what? It was the right thing to do. And when I got to a point in my life where I could no longer do that, but I could go and make sure that those kids were going to be okay, I did that too. And I guess I was meant to talk about this, you know, and the struggle is, I guess the reason it's coming out is because I just moved out recently, and my kids are going back to school on Monday. And it's bugging the hell out of me. That's going to cost me a lot of time with them. I spent a ton of time with them over the summer, and it's bugging me a lot. And I don't believe that the fact that it's bothering me is a bad thing. You know, the perspective that I've gained in this program through acceptance and through surrender. Through being able to identify myself as an addict and being okay with it, is I turn everything around and look at it from both sides. And sometimes I turn it inside out and beat up on it a little bit, smoosh it up, and you know, but I really do. I've learned how to look at things not only from my initial perspective. And I don't want to be okay. You know, that I don't want it to be okay. That with me, that doesn't bother me. You know, I don't want that to be okay with me. That's okay. It should bother me. It doesn't change necessarily what the right thing to do is. It doesn't change. And being able to stand here and tell you, that acceptance and surrender has been passed on to my daughters, and being able to tell you that this, through this program, has prepared them as much as it's prepared me, through you, for some difficult times in our lives, and it's really pretty cool. It's really a neat thing that. I panicked, and I cried like a baby, and I was consumed with fear that bad things would come out of this with my kids. I didn't care about me, but the bad things would come out of it. And you know what? You know what they did? They gave me a boost. They were my support system. You know, it's a wild, wild thing, but I guess. I'm really going all over the place now, and I guess that to try and tie it all up, my initial reaction is no longer what it used to be. My initial reaction used to be 180 degrees away from the truth. I could always depend on that. My reaction about surrender was, that's for wimps. My reaction about acceptance was, huh? What is that? You know, I didn't know what you were talking about when you were talking about acceptance. I didn't want to believe that I was an addict. My whole concept of speaking to strangers about my problems was stupid. And I came to the program believing this much, maybe I was an addict, just this much. The people in this program took over and took me by their hand and taught me to accept who I am. Each day starts and ends with me accepting who I am. When I'm not accepting who I am, I'm fighting, I'm off my square, I'm not living a spiritual existence, and I'm not caring about anybody that's in the way. I'm too self-consumed to be able to see what's important around me, and I'm too self-consumed to care about other people or myself when I do that. When I start off every day by being an addict, it gives me ground base to be able to work from. And it gives me a reminder that I got here and stayed here through other people trying to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, and so today I try and do that. And today I truly try to be kind to people as much as I can. That's a gift that is unbelievable. And the confidence level and the faith that I have in and not every single day, you know, I'm not trying to make it sound like I got this thing down pat, because I'm far from it, you know. This summer has been more of a struggle for me than a lot of years have, and it's because I've distanced myself from the program. It's because I've made other things more important than this program. And I can remember telling people I sponsored, I can remember hammering people, eating parts, drilling people into the table with my profoundness. See, over a hamburger. But my kids this. Put your kids before this program, you'll lose your kids. But my job, put your job before this. And you know, I didn't tell myself that. I wasn't telling myself that lately. I haven't been going to a lot of meetings. I haven't been. You know, people in my life carried me through that, you know, and now I'm reconnected, I'm going back to meetings. I know this happened for a reason. I feel like I've been standing up here babbling like a baboon. Have I, Nick? Thanks. I guess I better shut up, and I hope that none of that got taped whatsoever. Any of you buyers, I hope you get a flat tire on the way home. If you're new, well, find it. If you're new, let me say the truest blessing that I can tell you that I can be sure of all the time is the people that I surrounded myself with. Not because I wanted to; they surrounded me first, and I tried to make an effort to keep them in my life. Being an addict is not a bad thing, it's a great thing. I don't care a whole lot for people that don't have this disease anymore, and the gifts that the struggles have brought me and the gifts that this journey has led me to are more than any one person should have already in my life, and I hope that happens to you if it hasn't yet. And the best advice I can give you is don't try and figure out shit. Do what everybody says around here says to do, and keep it to about six things, starting with don't use, and everything will be just fine. And I hope I see you again here next year. There was a bat flying around over my head when I spoke here last year. Apparently, it's found a new place to live. And, thanks. I gotta go. Sit down.
I'd like to thank both speakers that shared tonight for their experience, strength, and hope. Could we please have a reading of Just for Today at the podium, please?
I'm Joe, I'm an addict.